This is The Women of Letters, a podcast dedicated to the TV show Supernatural and everything fandom.
And welcome to the first podcast of Women of Letters for 2016. Yay! Jules here from the Super Wiki with the wonderful and slightly hungover Amy in Sydney, also from SPN Contips and Sweet on Dean.
Yes. So it's a little hungover. I'm not bad now, but...
Excuse me. Speaking of Sweet on Dean, so hungover you missed a tweet from Jensen last night.
I cannot even believe it.
This is Amy, who would probably tweet from a general anaesthetic if Jensen tweeted. Seriously, I've never known Jensen not to tweet and Amy not to have responded within a number of minutes. I think she has an internally located alert system. Yet last night he tweeted and there was nothing. And I was really worried.
I saw it this morning. I was like, what? I missed a tweet. Oh, my God. I was out getting drunk.
I don't know how you're going to explain that to him at VanCon, at VegasCon.
I will apologise to him for not replying straight away.
after the 2,500 dads and I love you Brazils, exactly. I'm sure he was looking for it.
He would have been looking for my tweet.
Scroll.
Where's Amy? Why isn't she tweeting me? Oh, geez, I know. I'm quite disappointed in myself. It was such a cute photo, too. It would have made my night if I'd have seen it last night.
It was. And for those who did see it, and the second question, the first question, of course, people said was, how are they so adorable? The second question was, what is Danielle wearing on her head? Was actually answered by they were apparently out to dinner with Steve Carlson in Austin, and he tweeted a photo, and she actually had what turned out to be a scarf around her neck, which she apparently was later wearing on her head. So she may have been in the same state you were this morning, Amy.
Maybe. At least I didn't have to get up to a small child. So.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Yes. Actually, there's nothing worse than if you and your partner are hungover at the same time. I don't know about the small child part, but that thing of like, you get up and get me a drink. No, you get up. I'm more hungover than you. No, you are. Anyway, they look like they had fun.
Yes, they're adorable. Totally adorable. Even the hashtag weird. See, that was the other thing. I was like, you even had a cute hashtag and I missed it.
I should be keeping a track of all these hashtags. No, can you do that for me?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I can.
I think I need his... I have a Jensen on Twitter page on the wiki.
We'll start listing his hashtags.
Yes.
Okay.
I remember, I think maybe it was even at VanCon, someone had a photo op with him holding up...
hashtags.
Things of all his hashtags, and he totally denied ever tweeting pepperoni dreaming.
Oh, we can give him the evidence. It's in his timeline.
Deny all you want, Ackles. We've got screen caps.
It's one of my favourite ones.
How could he have ever forgot that?
Pepperoni dreaming when he's getting angry with the pizza man, which in Supernatural land has a whole different connotation.
It does. So Amy's going to put together a list of all Jensen's wonderful hashtags.
Okay.
I'll link to that shortly.
All right.
Because I think the world needs that.
I do.
Anyway, we are back after our mini end of year. Not our mini. The show is back. We had a hiatus sort of too. Mm-hmm. We were going to do a season 11 recap.
I don't know what happened there.
Life happened or something. Yes, I don't know. It's summer here. It takes too much energy to get up from the bean bag and put the box of wine aside to podcast.
Yeah, pretty much.
But we're back now. The show's come back with The Devil in the Details. mounting excitement over the week before as we got a few tantalising hints. And I should say, seeing it's our first one back, congratulations to Mr. Eccles for his People's Choice Award.
Yes, for his kettle.
So I'm
and
sure.
And I also liked how sassy he was at JaxCon about not being invited.
I don't relate the tale of how the video came about and what he said about the People's Choice Awards.
What, relate it? Oh, he was quite. Yeah, he was quite. The People's Choice Awards contacted Warner Brothers Publicity, and who contacted Jensen and said, "Oh, they really want a video of you, like a little thank you acceptance kind of video for them to put on their site." And Jensen was like, "Screw them, man! They didn't even invite me. I'm not making any video for them. No way." And then he's like, "Oh, okay."
And then, of course, Warner Brothers Publicity said, "Yes, hello."
yeah, exactly. And then they shot it with. He didn't want to do it on his own, so he did it with Misha. And then Cliff did the whole first take in slow mo, so they had to do a second take. Which
it's a pity they don't know any actual filmmakers, like everyone they work with.
So it was, very cute. And yes, congratulations to Jensen.
And I believe you said the kettle works very well.
Do you know, I found that kettle online here. It was actually on sale in Maya, and I thought, shall I buy it and get it engraved? Get it engraved for him and take it and get him to sign it. That would be hilarious. Except I'd have to carry a kettle to Vegas, but I thought I could get it. People's Choice Award winner, you know, fame, whatever his title was, Jensen Ackles, and then get him to sign it. I thought that would be really funny. Now I've given somebody else the idea.
Oh,
if you do it, you've got to credit me.
Amy, don't give away your good ideas like that. I know. I did see there was people did a photo op of him holding a kettle.
Aren't they gorgeous?
So yes, no, it was rather adorable. Apparently, all ad libbed, and it was
the same twice.
And the other thing that, of course, a couple of other things, okay, it's been an embarrassment of riches that did get us through her latest was the Tough Mudder video.
Oh, my God, thank you. I specifically made that Rob Benedict's New Year's resolution for him. Yeah. So, he may not have been aware of it, but I made that for him. Rob's New Year's resolution will be to release the goddamn Tough Mudder video, which was a pure joy. Wasn't it a joy? I must have watched it a million times already. Just adorable.
Oh, dear. Yes, it was. Made me very glad I've never done Tough Mudder and likely never to in my life.
I've got to admit, there was a couple of things I was like, that looked like fun, sliding through that tube. That doesn't look like fun, climbing over that wall. I'd never be able to do that hangy thing. It was like no way in the world.
And unfortunately, they'd run out of battery before the bit where you get electrocuted.
Oh, is that what happened? Because I was like, where's Osric going face planting?
Yes, no, one of the videos, I was updating the Tough Mudder page on the wiki and I was rewatching some of the con videos where they talked about it, and apparently the batteries on the GoPros ran out at the end. Well, I say at the end, I don't know at what point, but they'd certainly run out by the time they got to the bit where you run through. It's like a curtain, like it's all these electrical wires hanging down that, like an electric fence, give you a shock.
And some of them only are really small and some of them are really big shocks.
Yeah, and if anyone, I don't know, I think most Australians at some point in their life have put their hand on an electric fence.
Absolutely have. Cattle
usually
fence.
On Boink. Purpose.
I've done it.
Done a chain of people to see how many you can get the electricity going through. Peed on it to see if you get electrocuted through your pee. Anyway, there you go.
Definitely.
It's not really a pleasant feeling.
It's not. I remember very clearly holding onto a cow fence.
Feels like Boink. Sort of every bone in your body sort of dislocates for a moment or something.
It really gives. Yeah, it does. So no, but I was disappointed that we didn't get to see it. That would have been funny, but it was really cute, and it was. I loved how everybody kept coming up and cleaning them. You know, like somebody come up and just keep wiping mud off them,
off the lens and everything. Yes,
yeah, that was really cute. But
good on them. I mean, it's hard bloody work. It was obviously a really bonding experience for them. Mm.
And they're talking about doing it again this year, but with Misha and Matt, I think they were saying, and I thought, there's going to be like thousands of, well, not thousands, but I bet you there's some fangirls there this year cheering them on. Because we all know now.
Well, but it depends which one they do, because originally they were going to do the, I think, Portland one.
Oh.
And something happened. Oh, I think it was not long after JibCon when Jared had injured himself, so they didn't do that one. There's Tough Mudders on all around the country, so they don't have to do the Austin one.
No, they don't. No, maybe so, they might just do a different one.
People might turn up to the Austin one and they might be doing the Vancouver one.
And they could come here and do them. They're here. They might as well come
they
to Australia.
They certainly are. That's
them.
When I first heard about it, when friends of mine did it, and a colleague of mine at work, she went in a team, and they all dressed as superheroes.
Oh, gorgeous.
Is there that fit that they can cosplay and do Tough Mudders at the same time?
Oh, that's funny.
So, yes, no, wonderful, wonderful video. Thank you for Rob, I believe, did all the editing on it, which was much appreciated, and we finally got to see it. It was definitely worth waiting for.
We're pretty lucky to have all those guys and that they would share something like that with us.
It's certainly off the clock in terms of, part of their personal lives.
Yeah. I love that there was a moment in the car where, was it Rich going, this is just for us, right, though, isn't it?
Or Richard.
Maybe not.
I actually found probably the most moving part was Richard's. They were each at the end in the car talking about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I cried.
And he was, because obviously he nearly died from a stroke a couple of years ago, and what it meant for him and doing it with the guys. It obviously meant a lot to them all doing it together. So even if you're not into watching many muddy men run around doing things, it's certainly worth watching for the wonderful friendship between these guys.
Yeah,
and
I cried at the end with Rob's little speech, and then them all yelling out, "We love you, Osric."
There's also I can't remember which con it was, but a story about how they got back to Jensen's place and. Obviously, recovering and everything, but Rob apparently just curled up on the couch and went to sleep. And, later in the night, there was like Jason and Rich and Jensen having a jam session, like literally sitting around him playing guitar for hours, and he didn't even stir.
Oh.
And the next day, he refused to believe that it even happened. He was so exhausted, he'd literally just passed out.
Oh, bless.
So I've tried to link to a few of those tales on the wiki of them talking about, and the fact that I think Jared said he would do it and he hadn't even no idea what it was. It was just like, yep, I'll be there. And then he and Jensen are like Googling it going, oh, fuck.
What have we said yes to?
Yes. So, yes, hopefully they'll do it again. And wear the GoPros because...
Yes, wear the GoPros with extra long life batteries.
Yeah, for those of us who will never do it, it was a nice little insight into the madness of it.
And I believe they are. Well, they did they say this at the Australian Con? I can't remember where they said this, that they were going to auction off one of the shirts.
Oh, I did remember that being mentioned.
I think it was at the Australian Con that they said they're going to, one of the muddy shirts, they're going to auction it off. It's going to be signed by them all and they're going to auction it off at some point. So
they might change their mind and they want to
They might have changed their mind. I bet next time they don't have their last names on their backs.
And their ages.
And their ages. For the last names. That's too funny. Ackles and Padalecki. Oh, jeez.
Well, I think they were pretty anonymous given that they were covered in mud most of the time.
Well, yeah, at least it got covered in mud. It didn't look like they were very anonymous by the millions of selfies that they shot that day, though. I've got them all on my website. It's like a huge post of them. There were so many of them. So I don't think they were that anonymous.
Anyway, that was wonderful. And the last wonderful thing we had was just the few days before the Devil in the Details last week was the Keep Grinding promo, which was another in-house promo. So, Amy, as people will know who've listened to our podcast regularly, given that you are a promo producer in TV, it's normal for the network to do the promos for a TV show, isn't it?
Yeah, usually the network will do the promos. Sometimes the show themselves might do, like, say something like Survivor, and they do next time on Survivor, at the end of Survivor. Sure. The show would produce that. So those sort of previously ons and next time ons that kind of sit on either end of the show would produce that. But the actual kind of promotion for the episode or a bunch of episodes like Keep Grinding was, the network does it. Whoever's running the show does it.
So that's we've had a couple of times over the years and a couple of times recently when we're lucky enough to have had stuff made by the show. So this came out of post-production. I do believe it was Phil Segrisha's idea, one of the executive producers and directors on the show, and terribly I've gone and forgotten the name of the editor, whose name is John, and I've forgotten his last name. I'm sorry, I will find that out. Made this wonderful promo for the upcoming episodes, and it was very excellent. And we're very lucky to have such talented people to do that. I think. The difference is, and we've talked about the functions of promos before, because sometimes they do. People have opinions about how much they spoil, but they are there to advertise the show, obviously, so people watch it. But I think the thing that shows when we get the show promos done, they're a bit like fan vids. In that you can tell they're made by people who are immersed in the show, because they have that taste of being made by a fan, if you like, because they're a deeper cut into what's going on, they're made for the audience they know as fandom. So they're quite different in their, in their target audience and in what they're doing. So they're not trying to sell the show. They're making this just to go to the fans.
Exactly, and they don't have to be like the voice of the channel or the brand.
They don't have to do anything like that. But I think we're so lucky to get that because it's incredibly rare for that to happen and for the network and the studio to let it happen as well.
Yeah, exactly.
It says something about the standing in which Supernatural's held, that both Warner Brothers and the CW give them space to do these sort of things, and that they're understanding a lot more, I think, about the relationship between show and core fandom, if you like, that understanding the difference between that and audience, which are two different things, really. So I think it shows some sort of development that they can understand that this is not a competing thing with a promo, and that the people going to it will get it in a different way, and also probably starting to understand the different ways messages and that get shared within fandom compared to within audience and stuff. So,
yeah.
And it was really great. And,
yeah, it was good.
There's some fantastic episodes coming up.
Oh, it looks really good. I went through it frame by frame. And I always do that because, you miss little bits.
Oh, there were so many hidden bits in
there. Yeah, little bits, little quick cuts in the middle. But it also was just such a good grab, the Keep Grinding grabs that they used as the anchors for the piece was just really good. I mean, I really like the way they used it underneath the vision. So it was good. Yeah, it was exciting. It was very exciting.
Okay, now we should talk about the actual episode.
Yeah. Bloody hell. All right, that's it from us. Yeah. Hope you've enjoyed this episode. What? We didn't talk about the actual show.
We haven't done an episode for a while, so I hope people will forgive us our indulgence, but we have to talk about things that happened that we haven't had a chance to talk about.
Exactly, we do. So we need to talk about The Devil in the Detail, which was pretty damn epic.
Oh, I thought it was, and I know you're the same, but there are episodes, and I'm not sure what it is about them, but there is, because they're quite different in style and content and everything, but there are some episodes I can just watch again and again and again immediately, and I want to watch them again and again immediately. And they're not I'm not quite sure what they have in common, but this one I just, almost just had it on a loop for the first few hours. I just loved it so much, and I think it worked on so many levels to drive where we're going to be going in the second half of the season. You know, like the best episodes, it had great mythology, it had great character moments, it had great character moments for everyone. And let's face it, there are a lot of fucking people in this. We had the boys and Cass and Lucifer and Rowena and Crowley and Amara and Billy. And Ambrill. And, you know, so there were a lot of people in it, and it never felt rushed. It always felt like we were, you know, everyone was getting their due, and they were having their, you know, character beats and their moments. And it just, the pacing seemed perfect. It was both tying stuff up from the first half of the season and pushing stuff forward. It had surprises in it. It had laughs. It had great pop culture references. So I sort of liked it. What about you?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. It was. I love Andrew Dabb's writing, and it was his, wasn't it? I'm saying the right thing. Well, I said it. You know, like he did the second episode of this season and the second episode of last season, both of which were absolute crackers. And then this one. And as soon as I see he's writing it, I know that there's going to be really awesome pop culture references because he's great at that. And I've just sort of have really, like, in the last few years, his episodes just keep getting better and better. So I was just excited that he'd written it. I thought it's going to be really cool. But it was great. It was just like really non-stop from the, you know, sort of the once it after the crazy opener, it was, you know, like really non-stop, and the dialogue was beautiful, and the scenes between Mark and Jared were absolutely amazing to watch, and, you know, everybody was doing a fantastic job, and it had like a bunch of surprises in it that I just didn't even know anything about, so I was sitting there going, what, all the way through it. And it was yeah, it was a very cool episode. I loved it. I was the same. I've kind of watched it a bunch of times because it's just one of those ones that I can just throw on and just keep watching because it's got a lot going on. And the script is so delicious that you kind of hear a little bit of something different every time. You know, like you might just miss a word here and there. And so the more times you watch it, the more stuff that you pick up. But yeah. Absolutely loved this episode. I thought it was great, and it left me really kind of like, you know, a bit gasping at the end, just because so much was happening, and also because so much happened, and the end was so shocking.
But to go back, as you said, the beginning, now that has to go down as one of the best opening teasers in all time. And I want to be the person who had to, I want to know who was the person who had to tell Mark Shepherd he had to wear a onesie.
I wouldn't want to do it.
No.
No. No. I know, right?
Oh, it's adorable.
Oh, my gosh. And I love that he got a pop Sam. I mean, that's just cutest.
I got a Sam. And, I expect lots of onesie
cosplays.
We saw Mark Shepherd coming up, to which I'm sure he'll be suitably curmudgeonly.
No, it was a very – I was – because we got that promo at the end of last – before the hiatus. And
I know, and everyone was like,
what in God's name is this even about? And so it was actually great to see it in the show and see that there was
– And how cleverly
– cleverly a good reason for it.
The whole, you know, the thing about Lucifer had been contacting Sam, and that we find out he's been contacting Rowena. And, I mean, so, so clever. But, yes, I remember –
And also her kind of really complex feelings towards – you know, Crowley and being a mum, and that her face coming down those stairs is, you know, like, and she's having nightmares about, you know, grown-up Crowley being a little boy and her being like the mum. And yeah, it was really cool.
It was so well done. And again, the fact that it manages to be both, you know, absolutely laugh out loud hilarious and traumatizingly, you know, dramatic at the same time, you know, and when she touches her reindeer horns and just goes, these don't come off, you know, that's just those little moments of horror.
Yeah,
it was so good. I just, yeah, and then the reveal of Santa being Satan is
yes, and then poor Crowley, you know, but I've been a good boy, which I thought was, you know, really you know.
Well, and sort of echoes of his "I Want to Be Loved."
Yeah, exactly. You know. Yeah. So yeah, it was funny. I was like, oh, okay, and then we hit the cage, with you know, which was everything that happened in the cage and the wander through was great, and I was just loving the manipulation was so clever. In the way it was mirroring what Sam had said to Dean in the first episode of the season, where it's like, you know, I will keep doing anything to save you. I would do it again. And, you know, there's the problem. And Lucifer was saying exactly the same thing. Yeah. We kind of got me thinking, you know, well, if he was already, you know, like the darkness had loosened, whatever had happened in the cage meant that he could get his thoughts out, and he was contacting Sam in the next episode, giving him like visions. You kind of wondered if he was aware of that conversation, you know.
No, I think Sam's, and when he has that conversation with Dean in the season opener, I think what Sam's saying is like, we know we're both going to do that, but we really have to focus on the mission, because, you know, it's not worth it if people keep dying. So I think the contrast is that Sam thinks there is a way they can have it all, if you like, whereas Lucifer's saying to him,
you can't,
and so you know you should do this thing and sacrifice yourself. And I think Sam's, as we saw, and I mean, I think my one tweet review of the episode was Sam motherfucking Winchester.
Oh, he was a legend.
Was that he can see all that, but I think Sam now has the strength and the confidence to go, nah. We can actually, it doesn't have to be, and again, speaking of promos and outtakes, that the another in-house thing when they did that outtake of the Which Way, you know. When,
oh, yeah.
In the car, and Sam's like, you know, Dean keeps going, there's got to be another way, and then Jensen runs with that in a beautiful outtake. But I think that's the thing. It doesn't have to be either or. There can actually be a third way or a fourth way of doing things. Mm. And I think that's, you know, Sam breaking down that dichotomy of either we save each other or we save the world. Let's do everything. Mm. Like, let's do it all. And I think that's the contrast between where his thoughts were coming from when he was talking to Dean at the beginning and what Lucifer is saying, that you need to do this, you know, to make up for things. And I think that's why he could say no, and he could say, you know, no, I've got faith that, you know, my family and friends will get me out of this, and we'll battle you and win.
Yeah, I think what Lucifer doesn't know about Sam is that he seems to be in a much stronger emotional place now, and than possibly he was in season 5, coming off the back of the blood, the stuff, and, you know, and him and Dean are so tight, you know, like, yeah. they, you know, Dean's not even shy about saying, you know, like, when Crowley goes, you know, don't worry about Sam, it's like, excuse me, have you met me? You know, and he's not even shy about saying, Sam is my number one priority. He'd even said it, we're not doing this unless, you know, the episode before, unless we can guarantee that Sam is going to be safe. We're not doing it unless Sam's safe. So they're kind of being quite open about, you know, they're not hiding the fact that they're, you know, really whatever they are, Sam and Dean, and Sam as well, sort of, I trust my brother, I know he's going to be there, I know he's going to walk through the door. And I think that there's a difference there with their relationship now. They've always been tight and they've always had that bond, but there's been so many cracks through the years, and, you know, in season 5 there were epic cracks in what was going on.
It was really only just, you know, getting pasted back together at the end there.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think, you know, we've seen from the end of last season was, you know, them being more open with each other, you know, acknowledging it's, you know, when they've tried to do the best for their brother from the best intentions, but, you know, hiding things that's, you know, that has fucked things up. And I don't doubt they'll do that again, but they're certainly a more solid unit and a more more trusting in not just in, you know, I trust you to save my life, but also I trust you so I can tell you these things that I'm vulnerable about and that I don't understand. So, you know, Sam telling Dean, you know, in the wonderful, in the baby episode about the visions and, you know, immediately, you know, I had this dream.
Yeah.
So they're a lot more open in that way. I do have to say, though, and I do, every time one of them says it, I always laugh. When Sam says, you know, I trust my family and my friends, it's like, you've only got one of each. Yeah, both family, of you have one friend. Brother and one angel, okay? And the angel shared. So, like, yeah. Family and friends is sort of...
Family and friend. Singular.
Yes. Well, yes, and I don't know what the singular of family is, but it's probably just brother. But it's like, it makes it sound like there's a lot more of you.
There's not. There really isn't.
Which is too sad. But yes.
It is sad. But yes, and I think that that's one thing that was clear, and it was, you know, like, even though Sam did say, you know, there was a couple of times that, you know, Lucy was starting to get to him, because you can't help it when people, you know, are barraging you with stuff like that. But I just don't think Lucifer knows who Sam is really anymore.
Well, I think it shows how much reflection Sam has done on those particular, you know, particularly some of those big points in his life. And, you know, I thought the, you know, the Amelia and Riot scene. Yes, the dog was called Riot. I remember these things.
Yes.
Sam hit a dog. That will never not be funny. I absolutely adore, though, the fact that they were taking us back and Sam back to these memories and these times. I mean, because these are all moments, you know, that fandoms argued over a lot, particularly the season eight beginning and Sam not looking for Dean and all that. So I really admire, like, I think it works narratively, the fact that you're going back into these characters' past and motivations and, you know, mistakes that they've made and how what they thought was good at the time they look back on and it wasn't. It, you know, again, as we talk about when they pull these threads from the past, it just enriches the story so much because it's what we do as people and you so rarely see that in TV. You know, everything moves forward and it's so rare that, you know, people, characters in TV rarely refer to things that we've seen on the show. You know, how often does a character in season four talk about an event that we saw in season one? Very rarely. Mm-hmm. You know, too rarely for what we're like in real life when we're always referring back to
something
last
in our
lives, year, 5 years ago, or, you know, particularly with big events like that. So I think it just enriches the story so much and gives so much depth and more, you know, an insight into, you know, all the characters. And in this case, you know, particularly Sam, to think about, you know, what that was like for him. And of course, we know that, you know, Lucifer's obviously slanting things in a certain way, you know, for his own ends. And the fact that, you know, Sam has thought about these things enough that he's not swayed ultimately by Lucifer being able to say that and being able to, you know, that when he just says no in the cage.
Oh, it was so great. And then he just stands up and he just goes toe to toe with him, like, you know, calls him out on his bullshit. You know, I know exactly what you're going to do. I know who you are. Don't think for a second that you can manipulate me. I know what you're going to do, you know, and I you know, like, I am happy to die. And he just seems like, he just seems so much. And I think, as you say, it's reflection. And I think, you know, part of, probably maybe even saving Dean and how their relationship is now. He just seems so much, there was so much confidence brimming out of him in that moment that he knew that, you know, he will do what he needs to do. He will see his friends and family die if that's what has to happen for them to save the world. This is, he's happy for, he's not happy, but, you know, he's ready to face those things. But he could see right through the bullshit being fed to him, and he was not having any of it. And, you know, nothing Lucifer could say could chip away at his self-esteem. And once upon a time he could have, but he, you know, like, there was nothing there that Lucifer could say that would make Sam doubt himself or his brother or his friend. Singular.
Well, I think they're really, you know, Sam and Dean are really living the we're stronger together. Like,
yes,
finally,
they are now,
they're really
finally
living that. Nothing else has got in the way of that this year. You know, and it's not their fault that things have got the way in the past, but, you know, I think we're really seeing how
they are stronger together. Yeah.
Both
individually and together, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So their relationship and what they can do together is strong, but also when they're separated and Sam's in this situation, he's still drawing on that strength. I mean, he has absolutely no doubt that Dean's going to come.
There was no doubt. I just love that. And then Lucifer's, and he's like, and I know that my brother's going to come in here and kick down the door, and he goes, you're betting on Dean? He goes, I always have. And I just like, oh, my God, I'm just going to die.
That was such a love.
It was great.
Lovely mirror to Dean's line about, yeah, have you met me?
Yeah.
I just thought, you know, it was just a lovely, they both absolutely know what their brother's going to do. And, I was just fist pumping.
I know, me too. I was like, I love you guys.
But I have to say, given how much of the episode was shot in the cage, the lighting, I mean, Serge, DP on the show, that was, because you're trying to make us believe this is a space in hell somewhere, which is not easy to do. Apparently they had to rent a whole different soundstage to build that whole set on, because obviously it wasn't only the cage, it was all the surrounding bit as well. The performance was obviously were amazing, and I'm sure we'll talk more about those, but none of it would have floated. None of it would have been believable. None of it would have been as intense and intimate as it was without that lighting. And it was like, it was artistry. It was like incredible. The blue tones, the use of shadow, was just amazing. Mm. And the direction on the whole thing, which goes, as you said, from quite intimate close ups to that whole fight scene.
Yeah, the fights in the cage fight.
Literal cage fight.
Literal cage fighting. Oh. That was great
cage
as well.
Fighting is always in a cage. But yeah. Anyway, yeah. That was Tom Wright who actually also directed Baby, interestingly.
Yes. And did you also notice that there was a couple of those shots in the car of like really tight on Dean's face when he was that were baby-esque. So they obviously, you know, picked up some tricks doing that. And because I was like, oh, that's like a baby shot. We're right in Dean's face while he's making that phone call to Sam.
Yes.
Call me now. So,
but those little details, like the fact that he's hacked Sam's phone
to read his
voicemail message.
And that Sam left it. He didn't even record over it. He must have listened to it. But then who's going to leave a message for Sam? It's going to be Dean or Cass.
Oh, yes. Or Crowley.
Or maybe Crowley.
As we saw from
Crowley tends to call, not Moose, more often.
Yes, but as we saw from Dean's phone, you know, there's only three people calling.
Mm-hmm.
His brother, his friend, the angel, and the king of hell.
Yeah. 666.
But yes, no, that was amazing. But to get back to the car scene, of course, then we have, that wonderful effect as Dean gets into the smiting zone, and then we had poor Jensen having to throw up.
I know, and it was really realistic.
It was. I think there were probably a few people having a little bit of a dry retch as vomiting is never good to watch.
I was like, oh my God, that looks so real.
I hope people ask him about it at Nashville, because it can't be pleasant. I mean, you assume he has a mouthful of
goop,
liquid that then has to spit
out.
Not a pleasant thing to act, I'm sure.
No, sure.
But that was great, because again, that came out of nowhere. Like, I wasn't expecting that. And again, it worked as a wonderful device to sort of separate Cass and Dean as well. But that was great. I loved that, and it makes sense, of course, too, that smiting would have a little bit of an after effect on
power come zipping down. But no, I actually thought the throwing up scene was fantastic. I was like, oh my God, that actually looks really real. But it was really good, and like you say, it came out of nowhere. It's just suddenly like pulling over and rushing out of the car to puke.
It's
like, oh.
Yeah, and we know if it reduces Dean to that, then it's got to be pretty full on.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's certainly a good reason for him not to have accompanied Cass into ground zero there. But
because we don't want him turning into a pillar of salt.
No. Although I'm sure there'd be lots of fangirls who'd buy Dean Winchester salt.
Hey, Sam could use him in around windows and things then.
Oh! No! And then just sort of still on the directing and lighting comments was when Dean goes back to the bunker, we both get this wonderful tracking shot as Dean goes through the bunker yelling for Sam. And again, I'm just amazed at like how big that set looks. Like it really feels like he's walking through this huge space.
Yeah, it looks amazing. That looks I love that shot. We were right up above, and the crazy lighting on the floor of all the
So you get that crisscross lighting coming from above, and yeah, I just thought, wow, you know, I just that set, you know, continually like pays for itself.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoever paid for it, whoever had to justify the budget line, it just, you know, it's really, that was just such a great shot. It emphasised Dean's aloneness there.
Yeah.
And then him having to take that call from Crowley was...
Son of a bitch. Yeah.
Hello to you too, Puddin'. That's a Harley Quinn line. I was very happy. Not that I see Crowley as Harley at all. But, yes, no, that was stunning. And then we get – now, I don't know if you can answer this. When he goes to where the entrance to hell is, first of all, wonderful to have Billy the Reaper back.
I like her.
I'm just so glad they found a reason to bring her back, and I'm sure they will keep finding
her. Yeah, I think she'll be back.
For the few lines that she had, she just fucking owned the screen. She just had that saltiness about her.
And it was nice to hear that Sam and him had had that conversation as well, because he knew about Billy, he knew about she was after them. I was like, oh, they've sat and chatted about that, you know, that's really cool. I love that, because, you know, people are always like, oh, I don't think Sam's ever told him, but we forget that
have conversations when you're not around.
I know, well, they don't really, but but you know what, exactly that. I'm like, it's going to sound ridiculous. They have lives outside of what we see. Of course, they actually don't.
Well, they do. I mean, shut up. Of course they do. We only get to see a bit of it, but it all goes on when we're not there.
Yeah.
But she's amazing. But my point was that when she asks for the password and he sings Camp Down Races,
what's that
a reference to?
Oh, I don't know.
Damn it.
It's got to be a reference to something, doesn't it?
Well, I just immediately thought, it immediately tickled at something in my head that's from a movie or something, and I cannot for the life of me work out what it is, and I feel really dumb.
Yeah, I don't. South Park? No.
Has it been used a lot?
Used in South Park.
As a password, or?
Sung by the Butlers in season 7.
The
Cleveland Show.
Could be a really deep cut, I suppose.
Yeah, I didn't know. I knew they had, I thought there must have been a reason, because why is he singing Camp Down Races? But,
well, I assumed, you know, that's what, Crowley, you know, had said, do that. You know, that's the password, but I just, yeah.
Yeah, it's got it. There's got to be a reason for it.
Anyway, if anyone knows, tweet me, please. It's a movie reference that, or TV reference, probably a movie reference that I just is, yeah, in the back of my old brain and I can't get to it.
Can't find it.
I did do a bit of Googling, but it was nothing where I thought it was so
relevant.
I might just be hallucinating, which is quite possible as well.
It might have just been a funny thing for him to sing Duda Duda.
Quite possibly. Like, it was more that it just immediately twigged. Oh, yes, he's singing that because.
And, yeah, yeah.
But then sometimes a song is just a song.
Yes. Well, though, let us know if it's not.
But yes, wonderful to see Billie back. And I note that she was reading a Neil Gaiman comic.
Yeah, she was. Yeah. And I really loved the scene to, as that scene continued and she sort of opened the doors to hell, when Dean sort of stood in the doorway kind of looking in and just the trepidation on his face, just like he hasn't been back there since, you know, he was pulled out of there by Cass, and just that look on his face, like, I cannot even believe. He just, you could feel his dread of having to go there.
Yeah.
It was, you know, really well done, I thought, that he was just sort of standing there motionless for a little while, trying to, you know, get that foot to move forward down into hell, my God. And I loved it with the long stairs down as they were coming down. I really love how they've created this particular look at hell. It's really cool.
Oh, and again, if you look at go in at the screenshots and look at the detail. Ooh, I mean,
walls
work,
are amazing.
Oh, there's like engravings in different languages all over the walls, and sort of you know, demonic faces coming out at various points, and sigils, and like the detail is absolutely incredible. And this is for stuff that you barely see as. Because when you're watching the action, you're watching the characters, and then if you freeze frame it, or even watch it without the dialogue on, and then you're suddenly like, "Oh my god!" Like,
yeah,
they could
amazing.
Have just had stones there, but they've gone to so much detail to make them look aged and to have these different references on them, and all these different languages engraved on them. It's just, just mind blowing the level of detail that makes it all feel so much more real. And you know, that room again where the cage is, and there's all these like skeletons,
bones on the floor.
Yes. I mean, again, really cool. It just, even the design of the cage itself is just amazing. I mean, it again, itself, the world building is just wonderful. Just amazing.
It did. I love what they've done with hell. It feels really creepy and it's very, very cool. I really dug that long staircase. I thought, oh, this is so neat. It's got a great big staircase going down into hell. It's really cool. Yeah, it was good.
And then we go back to Cass, of course, looking for Amara's body, and he runs into Mini Cass. Well, not Mini Cass, but... She had echoes of Cass about her just in being a bit nerdy.
Yeah, she was a bit awkward. Well, yeah, she was just a little bit awkward. I loved her, though. I love her glasses. They were awesome.
but, yeah, no, she – so, you know, we finally get to – we haven't spoken to another angel for a while, and it was good to get, again, this idea that, you know, Castiel's obviously – well, to say he's in poor standing in heaven's an understatement.
Yes. Yeah, it was sad to hear that. She was scared that he was actually going to kill her. And well, that's what they say. That's the nicest thing they say about him, is that he kills angels. So God knows what else they're saying.
Well, you know, remember he's the one who, you know, let Metatron escape.
That's true.
You know, so
I mean, the whole Leviathan episode.
Yeah, so it's not, you know, it's you know, even though I'm Team Cass, it's not surprising that he's not. You know, angel number one in heaven.
Mm.
And again, I was sort of sad that Ambriel got killed so quickly, because, you know, since Hannah was killed, we don't really have an insider in heaven. And I'd love to know, you know, I'd love to have someone who's on the inside to get that bit more of an insight as to what their plans are.
Someone on the inside who doesn't hate Cass. Well,
that might be hard to find at the moment.
I know, poor Cass. But yeah, and I thought it was really great when Amara took Ambriel's grace, and then like the darkness kind of glued itself back onto her. Yeah, and the light sort of came through, which made me think, what if they actually end up killing her? Does that mean that darkness falls off her? Because like she was unconscious or whatever from the smiting, and so it was like her darkness had fallen off and made the world dark.
Yes.
And then it all reattached to her, and so the world came light again, which made me think, well, what if they kill her? Will the world just go permanently dark because her darkness will fall off? Her darkness will fall off. That sounds ridiculous.
No, but, well, it'll be dissipated and maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Who knows? But it was a wonderful effect. And, look, I can't help it. I'm really Team Amara. I think she's awesome.
I like her too.
I know she's evil and everything. And she had that great line about God having terrible taste in men. It made me laugh. But she's, you know, I think Emily Swallow's done amazingly with her, and she is such a forceful presence. And I was genuinely afraid for Cass at this point. What I thought was going to happen was that I thought she was going to possess Cass because her vessel was broken or whatever.
Well, so something's wrong with her vessel.
Yes, but before the episode, my theory was, oh, well, that's why they're worried about Cass, because Amara's possessed him. And I'd seen the screen cap of Cass with the "I am coming" on him, which will never not be funny.
Yes.
Writers, how did you write that without laughing? dirty-minded people.
Well, the photo of the four of them on set didn't help.
No, it didn't. there will be many memes forever with Cass with that on him. "I am coming" written on him. But, yes, I think I had been thinking that might be what happened to...
Yes, Cass. I thought it was going to be some entanglement with Amara as well, because I knew he was going to go and look for her, and I thought he might, you know, I was the same. I didn't know whether she was going to possess him or what was going to happen, but I thought the reason that he was going to be in trouble and Dean was saying, you know, we'll get him back, I thought the same thing. I thought it was going to be something about Amara. So I was the same in that scene. I was like, ooh, what's going to happen? Because I feel like... that's where I thought it was going. Mm. So, and then she was just really mean to him. Words hurt, Amara. Words hurt.
Yes. yes, they do. They do hurt. And at least she didn't kill Cass.
Well, that's.
But then he got to end up being a vessel. But to go back to. To Ambrielle, of course, she then, you know, has the role that Lucifer's been having with Sam, although in Ambrielle's case entirely unconscious and not motivated.
No, but she does. It says almost exactly the same thing.
Yes, and I think she's being a bit deliberately cruel in you know, saying we're both expendable and that, because I think she's probably... pissed off at who wouldn't be about being expendable. And so I think she is sort of trying to be a little bit hurtful to Cass, but obviously that's what digs into his head. And look, you know, like all of them, Cass has done things that he regrets. And, you know, obviously this idea that he can save the day is then what motivates him to finally say yes to Lucifer, mainly, I think.
Yes, I think... Well, yes. I think he's just been in a pretty bad space for a while now, Cass. I mean, if you think he's just come off that attack dog spell as well, where he was all kind of rabid, and he's really not long passed through that, and he's, you know, like, so he's probably still feeling a bit sort of shaky from that. Then he was tortured by the angels, and Hannah turned against him, so, you know, like, someone he thought was on his side ended up, you know, trying to manipulate him into giving up the boys. And I think he's had a really rough trot, so I think her coming in and sort of saying all those things to him, he's probably, you know, not in a sort of a weaker place than he might be in other occasions, just from what he's gone through in sort of the recent weeks or leading up until that time. So I think everything she was saying to him probably just reinforced how badly he was feeling about all the mistakes he's even made, you know, getting a tack dog spell and all that stuff kind of all tumbling on top of him. You know,
yeah,
so I think...
well, and I think, I mean, and we've discussed that, you know, for a while, I think Cass has been, going back to last season, you know, searching for some sort of identity and purpose, particularly after his, you know, being just, you know, he's falling out with Heaven and being without his grace and being of, you know, mixed assistance to the Winchesters. I think, and even when he is helping them, I think he's not... that hasn't become his mission, and I'm not saying it can't, you know, it can't be Team Free Will, and it can't be, but it hasn't to this point. And I think that's his, you know, again, part of his motivation is for him, you know, in some ways he's doing this for himself. I need to take control, make a decision, to do something.
Yeah. I agree. I think he's like, well, then I can do this. This is something I can do. So, and I think he's thought exactly the same thing. I'm just going to take control of this situation. And maybe he does, you know, he's an angel too, so he's probably got different information. And maybe he does kind of think, you know, that their best chance is with Lucifer. I mean, we all know he's a liar, but he is also, you know, one of the most powerful angels, and maybe Cass thinks, I don't know, maybe he thinks he does have a chance at destroying the darkness, and maybe he thinks this is the best use of his particular skills, is to allow Lucifer to take him on.
I mean, I think we'll have many, and so will everyone, and the Winchesters are going to have many. Are you making popcorn?
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I'm actually just putting something in the oven.
Oh, okay. I was just trying to work
out. I'm so sorry, people. I'm being, because I just realised it's 7:30 and I thought I've just got to pop something in the oven. So I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I've already made my dinner, so I'm having salad niçoise.
So. Oh, very nice.
So I think he has been looking for identity and purpose, and like the Winchesters have, you know, that often motivates you to take decisions. And, you know, it's the heat of the moment thing as well. And a last-ditch thing. And, you know, as I said, I'm sure we'll all argue over whether it was a good or a bad decision.
Well, only time will tell.
Well, that's true.
Initially, it looks like a pretty bad one, but, you know, who knows?
Well, again, you know, if we stay with the We're Stronger Together, it would have perhaps, you know, I think they should have, they needed a bit of a team meeting and a memo beforehand.
Yeah, I think.
You know, and I'm pretty sure everyone should have got the memo that allowing yourself to be possessed never ends well.
No, exactly.
I think that should be pretty much in the policy manual at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they should all know that by now.
But, you know.
No, exactly. But, you know, I don't know. I think it was a spontaneous decision. I don't know that he planned that. I think that was... I've read some people saying that they think he had thought that through and planned that, but I think that was in the moment.
I read people saying that they thought that Amara had planned it.
Yeah, I read that too.
I don't think she knew what was going on elsewhere.
No, me neither.
That we didn't, well, we certainly had no indication that she was aware of that Sam was in the cage, blah, blah, blah. So
No.
We may find that out, but...
We might, but no, for now I don't think she's aware of any of that, or probably even Lucifer, you know, being able to kind of wiggle his way out in of the cage, even just mentally. For me, I felt like it was... It was a spur of the moment thing for Cass to sort of decide to take that action.
Yeah.
And we'll just see how that plays out. Do you think he's in there with Lucifer, or do you think he's in the cage?
Well, it's interesting. I was asking this question on Twitter today because my immediate reaction had been that he would be left in the cage. But then I was pondering on that. So I'm not sure. What do you think?
The reason I think that he might be in the cage is because Lucifer was so specific about ensuring that the only person who could open the cage was dead. And I thought that could be, you know, like if he had left Rowena alive and she could reopen the cage and maybe Cass could get out and go into another vessel, you know. That's why I thought that he might be in the cage. But, you know, like Sam was in there with Lucifer when when Lucifer took Sam. So he could, Cass could really well be in there, but maybe it plays different for angels. I don't know.
Yeah. Yes, I think we're sort of outside of any rules that we're aware of about, you know, using vessels and everything. Of course, Lucifer's vessel, Nick, is obviously long gone. We're just seeing how he's representing himself.
Yeah, he's just projecting as Nick.
Because obviously he needed a vessel, so he actually doesn't have one. And then we've got the whole, you know, we know Jimmy's no longer present within Cass. He's basically an empty meat suit, if you like. But
and Cass's vessel was rebuilt, so it's not even, it's kind of like,
yeah,
it's kind of Cass's own version now. It's not even really Jimmy anymore.
Which also means that it could be strong enough to hold Lucifer, which we know his original human vessel wasn't. So, look, I think really cleverly, the writers have got a bit of open book at this point.
Yeah, I like that. They do that quite a bit. They give themselves a little bit of open wiggle room that, you know, they don't lock themselves in so that they do, you know.
We have no precedence for this. No. There's been no laws set down. Other than the issue around consent for the vessels for angels, there's been no, you know, law about what how they can use vessels and not. So so it'll be interesting whether the boys have to save my feeling is that Cass might be in the cage because that gives the death of Rowena more weight.
Yes, that's why I think he's in the cage, because now they truly have no way to get him back. Because if he's in there with Lucifer, it's really up to Cass. You know, they can't save him, essentially, because it's up to Cass to get rid of him. But if it's, because you can't, like, expel, well, you can do that. They did do that once, didn't they, with Gadriel, but just as Lucifer. So that's why I was kind of more thinking he'd be in the cage, because now it is a real problem of how they're going to get him out. But why is Rowena the only person who can do that spell?
Yes, they may find another witch. They, of course, may get assistance from heaven.
Who knows? Billy?
Billy, I mean, we know that Death was able to access, because, of course, he got Sam's soul out of the cage.
Yes.
So we know that he can access places like that. So whether that could be a role for Billy, I think there are many options at this point. And obviously, Cass will be, if he is in the cage, will be saved at some point. But
yes,
that may involve, you know, making deals with heaven, or another witch, or someone else very powerful. Who knows at this point?
I wonder how long it'll take them to twig. I think they're going to...
That's going to be the interesting thing, that, at what point do they realise that Cass isn't Cass?
I think the promo for next week did say something like, he's a bit off, you know, but...
That's not unusual for
I was going to say, it's not unusual. I was about to say that. He's been a bit off on and off for, you know, yeah. So, you know, it would probably be quite hard to pinpoint it, but I do wonder how long until they kind of... I feel like it might be a few episodes before, or a couple of episodes, you know.
I would think so, at least. And then once they find out, of course, then
that'll be...
How long it'll be to get him out's another thing.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Ooh, how are they going to get him out of there? And what about Rowena? Do you think she's dead?
That was such a shock.
Such a shock. I had no clue. And, you know, the sad thing was, I mean, that scene between her and Mark... where she was telling Mark that Crowley that she has to hate him because if she didn't hate him, she would love him. And, like, Mark's got a little tear in his eye, and it was so wonderful. And we're getting this really good backstory to Rowena that really sort of shows us why she's become who she became and why, you know, looking at Crowley is so painful for her, you know, to have him around because of what has happened. And then, you know, to have her say, and I will never love again, because that's weakness. And then to be weak enough to give herself over to Lucifer, which ends up killing her, you know.
So it was just she's saying all that, and then she ended up not sticking to her own rules.
I'd been hoping for some hot, sexy times between Lucifer and Rowena, when it was obvious that there was some the other last episode before the hiatus, that there was some connection between them. Mm. I thought, oh, maybe there'll be some hot, sexy times. And then once, you know, we knew it was he was in Cass's vest, we were still hoping for some hot, sexy times. I'm not surprised, because, of course, Lucifer is Lucifer. It'll be really fascinating to see the relationship between him and Crowley.
Oh, my gosh. It's going to be...
there. But I did want to, like, all power. Again, Ruthie Connell's one of those actors who came in who was so outstanding that a character that was meant to be around for a couple of episodes turned out to be around for a couple of seasons, has become certainly a fan favourite on the screen, a fan favourite at conventions, and just such a wonderful presence in the fandom. And, I mean, we're so lucky because we know that's not going away anytime soon.
Yeah.
It sort of softens the blow a little bit. but she will be missed, her dynamics.
I love her. Yeah, I'd really grown to love her character, you know.
Oh, and, you know, yes. So much more she could have done, and her relationship with Crowley's been wonderful.
So, I mean, you've got to think Rowena's got to go to hell. She's a witch.
Well, yes, and that's what I said. She can turn up. She can turn up as a demon, and when Lucifer kills Crowley, Rowena can become the queen of hell.
Yes, there you go.
But she has been just wonderful. I was also hoping for sexy times between Sam and Rowena, but I had to write that fic myself. because she's just been such a huge presence. I mean, she owns the screen when she's on it. And she, if anyone has ever seen her at a convention, she owns that awesome stage when she's on it as well. So yeah. Hat tip to Ruthie. You have been, and I know will continue to be, a wonderful part of the SPN family. Mm. You're a wee cheeky lass.
Yeah, she's awesome.
And very gorgeous.
And very gorgeous.
Thank you for your generosity with the fandom and your awesomeness on screen. Yeah. So we will hope you are back again. But it's it is one of those deaths where I'm sort of it was shocking, and I'd much rather have Rowena around than not have her around. That's without dispute, but I can bear this death in the context of the story.
Yeah.
We have to have Lucifer be Lucifer, and assuming he's not going to kill Crowley immediately, he had to, we have to be aware that this is someone who's going to take the price of everything.
Yeah.
That he can. And of course, it was shocking to see him do it as Cass.
Yes, very shocking. Really shocking.
Seeing that. And, snaps to Misha for his wonderful embodiment of.
My gosh, I know.
Lucifer. So that's going to be an absolute, part of me is purely excited to see that a whole new range we'll get to see from Misha in him being Lucifer. That's just going to be amazing to watch.
Yeah, no, that he did. He was amazing when he came through, and came through the door and just really just became Mark Pellegrino in many ways. I thought he did. And then he did an amazing job. And it was so – that Ruth – the Rowena death was so, so shocking. I'm the same as you, though. I was shocked, and I was like, damn, because I really like that character. But in the context of the story, having Lucifer doing it, and have it so shocking with Cass actually doing it and sort of taking away the one key to the cage that, that they're going to need to get their friend back, I think – made it really powerful, and so I can understand the reasoning, and like you, I can live with it, though I will miss her, and I'm dearly hoping that, as a massively powerful witch, there's some way to bring her back. But I'm fascinated to know what's going to happen with Crowley, because Lucifer can't allow him to just be roaming free, because he's going to go straight to the. I mean, he's tight with those boys, even though no one wants to admit it. There's no way that he wouldn't tell.
Well, I suppose, you know, it comes down to how Lucifer thinks, or how Lucifer thinks he needs or can use Crowley.
Yeah.
About keeping him alive. Lucifer's got nowhere to run off to at the moment, so I'm sure he will be hanging out in hell as a bit of a base.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see... Yes, to what and remembering, of course, Lucifer was ruling hell before, you know, before Azazel, before Crowley. So,
but Crowley, Lucifer's
now got all of hell at his disposal.
Yes, true, but Crowley's fought tooth and nail for everything that he's got there, and I can't imagine him, Lucifer, otherwise rolling over and allowing. Everything he's gained to be gone. No, but I think
he'll be biding his time.
He'll play it because he's smart and he'd rather be
alive and not king of hell than dead and king of
nothing.
So, I think he will take that tact. But I think it more depends on what value can Lucifer see in keeping him around, and maybe it's just to do the books or something. Maybe he'll, you know, demote him back to Crossroads Demon, or he'll put him in a cage.
I think he'll keep him well and truly
close.
Close.
I think on a short leash.
Yeah, very, very short. Yeah, I think so. Because you'd be crazy not to. I mean, he's got this far. You know, he's obviously smart, and Lucifer. He can be a bit you know, there was a lot of ego, I think, going on with what he was trying to do with Sam. He just believed Sam would say yes to him, I think. So Lucifer maybe has that against him a little bit.
Yes, although, you know, of course the big thing is Lucifer going to make a move against Amara?
Well, I don't know. Or is he going to? Is he going to? I was like, why wouldn't he
go straight back up to heaven?
I don't know. I mean, and what is the relationship with Amara, seeing as he also has had the mark of Cain? You know, why is Dean bonded to her and Lucifer not?
Oh, good point. Oh, no, he gave the mark of Cain to Cain. So I don't know having it. He created it. So
no, but he was the lock and key. That's what Death said at the end of the last season. He said to Dean that God gave Mark, the original Mark, to Lucifer, who then passed it on to Cain, who then passed it on to Dean. And Lucifer was the original lock and key, and I assume, you know, that corrupted him, and, you know, that's how he became the devil. But he was the original lock and key for locking up Amara, and that's why, you know, Sam was sort of saying, yeah, but you had your dad and all that kind of stuff to help you out. It wasn't just you who defeated her last time. Yeah. You know, there was a troop of you. So he was the original lock and key, which, you know, Dean didn't have it. You would think that there would be some kind of bond there as well, which would be interesting. And maybe they will join forces. Is he her auntie?
Is she his auntie?
Yes, she his auntie.
I don't quite know how those familial relationships work.
God's his dad.
Sort of.
Yeah. So very. Yeah, it's very interesting. But I can't even imagine where it's going. Which is cool.
Which is wonderful. A couple of notes to end on. We got a Chupacabra shout out.
Oh, yeah.
Which I always love. And that ties into the fact that The X-Files is back this week.
Tomorrow.
Yay.
Oh, my gosh.
Amazing. I know. Many influences of The X-Files, obviously, on Supernatural. Huge influence, of course, being Kim Manners, who worked on and shaped and was involved in creating both shows. And there was a wonderful promo photo out from the third episode, which has Mulder against a headstone in a cemetery, which has a tribute to Kim Manners on it, which was amazing. So you'll be watching The X-Files, I know.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited. Oh, my gosh.
I'm going to have a viewing party on Tuesday to watch the first two episodes. So,
is it two episodes playing?
One night after another, I think.
Oh, so, I did not know.
It's two episodes.
That's exciting.
So that will be wonderful. Also starting this week is the Sarah Gamble's new series, The Magicians.
Yeah.
Get onto that, peeps. You are going to love The Magicians.
Yeah, I've watched the pilot episode that they dropped last whenever.
Yep, it's a great series. There's a wonderful Breakbills website up. Breakbills is a sort of Hogwarts equivalent in this verse, with Rick Worthy telling you how to do your entrance exam. He's the dean of the magic school. It's a really, really great series, so get onto that. And one more bit of news is that Eric Kripke's time travel TV show has been picked up by NBC, a show he's writing with the amazing Sean Ryan, who's written on a million shows, creator of The Shield, and they've got a time travel show. Apparently there was a bidding war between networks.
Oh, that's great.
Which must be a rare thing for showrunners to hear these days.
Yeah, absolutely.
And very exciting. So, yay, Kripke. And the last one is Adam Glass, who left Supernatural last season to write and be showrunner on a Criminal Minds spin-off called Beyond Borders. That starts, I think it's the beginning of March, but don't quote me, I'll remind you before then, but the first trailer for that dropped. It's like a version of Criminal Minds, but set around the world. So, Supernatural crew, past and present, doing wonderful, wonderful things. If you're into comics, Robbie Thompson's got three amazing titles out at the moment, Silk Spidey and Venom Space Knight, all amazing. Think the next issues of all of those are out in the next couple of weeks. So
don't know where he gets the time.
Oh my god, neither do I. And the first two issues of his Spidey comic, which is Spider-Man at High School, and it's hilarious, they sold out, so they're doing a second print run, which is amazing. So
oh, that's great.
Get into it. It's an all ages one, and it's really, really funny. So it's Spider-Man going to high school in the present day. So, like, he's Instagramming photos of villains that he beats and everything. Anyway, it's very, very fun, as you would expect from Robbie. Thank you very much, Amy.
Thank you, Jules. It's been good to be back again.
It has, and it looks like there's some amazing episodes. In fact, a Robbie Thompson episode coming up next week, our Wayward Daughters episode the week after, and lots more amazingness to come.
Yeah.
So we'll be here on Women of Letters to squee about all of it.
Woohoo! Yep, we sure will be. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Women of Letters podcast. If you'd like to contact us, our email is wolspn@gmail.com. You can follow Amy on Twitter @AmyInSydney and Jules @SuperWiki.